Our next case is 2019-49, State of Ohio versus John Edward Nelson for the appellant.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court, reserve 4 minutes, please. As written, violation conduct that constitutes a felony level crime or leaving Ohio is not subject to the caps. All other violation conduct is subject to the caps. The plain language of the statute mandates that binary operation. There are no words in the statute to get to a different interpretation. Any attempt to do so includes writing words or concepts into the statute, and those arguments are for the legislature, not this court. There are three primary considerations that illustrate this binary operation. First, we know the legislature was using this court's not criminal in nature definition of technical, because it's presumed that it was doing so, as this court recently reiterated in Waite versus DHC LLC. Because RC 1.42 requires that terms that have gained a special meaning by legislative authority or otherwise, such as the decision from this court, are to be understood in that way, and because the legislature explicitly excluded leaving Ohio. This court's definition of technical violations are those violations that violate the terms and conditions of the parole agreement that are not criminal in nature, such as failing to report with the parole officer, association with known criminals, leaving the state, leaving employment, etc. This court's definition included leaving Ohio as technical. The legislature purposefully grafted that out because it understood that. The second major consideration that illustrates this binary operation is, again, from RC 1.42, which requires that terms be understood in context. The context here is that a violent misdemeanor offense, such as M1 assault, or a sex offense misdemeanor, such as sexual imposition, which requires sex offender registration requirements, are subject to the caps. Against that backdrop, it's difficult to fathom that not criminal in nature conduct would be treated harsher.
Counsel, let me ask it this way. Some person violates every one of the parole rules that are not criminal, associates with known criminals, leaves the state. You can name a dozen of them. It does all of them. Caps still apply?
If the court wants to send them to prison, yes. But the court is not hamstrung. Local incarceration, up to 6 months, is there for the court. Harsher restrictions in community control is there for the court. So the answer is, as written, and prison, yes. But again, there's plenty to do to work here and to punish. The third primary consideration that leads to this binary operation is lenity. There are no superseding codified interpretive canons in this context that would control if there is any ambiguity on this binary operation. Therefore, lenity controls, and the defendant gets the benefit of the doubt. One final point is that there is legislation pending that would require this non-binary operation, and that demonstrates that those arguments for that type of operation are for the legislature, and it may be that they're working.
Well, not necessarily, counsel, but my concern is, why would we have a bright line? Why would we not want a trial court to be able to say, this is something that some might, in a different case, it might look technical, but in this case, it really goes to the heart of what I was trying to do to get this defendant to act differently. Why is that not better, a discretionary test better than a bright line rule?
There are a number of answers to that. First, the language of the statute doesn't allow for it. Second, the undeniable purpose of House Bill 49, the budget bill which established the caps, was to reduce the amount of low-level felony offenders in the state's prison population, to save the state money, and to provide drug addiction treatment to offenders by keeping them in their local communities. As written, this binary operation is clear. If that's not what the legislature intended, then the legislature needs to rewrite it.
Councilman, would you agree that if we define the word technical as de minimis, then it's going to become de minimis in the eye of the beholder? Every trial judge will look at some type of violation of the rules. For instance, when I was a trial court judge, if someone tested positive for marijuana, I might not look at that as the most serious form of the violation, but one of my colleagues might think that was very serious. And so if we don't have a bright line rule, you're going to have a lot of disparate treatment throughout the state of individuals, right?
Correct, Your Honor. And that supports this binary operation.
But shouldn't, let's say from Cincinnati, somebody drives across the bridge to go to Anderson Township, which is Ohio also, but they have to go through Kentucky. That's kind of a technical violation. They're out of state, right? So you're saying a trial court has to treat that the same as a flight to Mexico to visit friends in the cartel area?
No. At that point in time, the court would be able to have the discretion if a violation is filed on that precise purpose. You were out of the state for 10 minutes when you drove from X to Y in Cincinnati. Then there's nothing in the statute that would prevent the court from having to go above the caps there or having to send the offender to prison. The court's discretion would be full there on what am I going to do? So the court would have the full discretion to impose what is just.
So in both cases, 6 months, whether I go to Kentucky for 10 minutes or fly to Mexico.
Incorrect. If the allegation is that you left the state of Ohio, the caps do not apply. The point that I was making was just because the caps don't apply doesn't mean the court has to send you to prison above the caps. Because the plain language mandates a binary operation of the caps, the decision below should be reversed. If there are no further questions.
Counsel, he was serving consecutive sentences, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And there were two sentences imposed here. He violated both.
Well, yes, there were multiple offenses for which he had been sentenced, and those sentences were to be run consecutively. If he violated community.
So he violated several of his sentences.
Yes.
All right, and so it's 180 days for each violation, each sentence that is violated.
If they are F4s, 90 days if they're F5s.
Okay, and these are F4s, right?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe so.
Okay, so he could get a year. Actually, I think the calculation in the briefs was instead of 34 months, 24 months. Is that correct?
In terms
of eligibility. For if 180 days is to be imposed for each community or for each violation or for each offense, I'm sorry, consecutive felony offenses, and you stack those, he's looking at 24 months rather than 34 months. Or you're saying, though, he only faces 180 days?
I'm saying that none of his conduct were violations that allowed for the trial court to impose a prison sentence above the caps.
Okay, but you do agree that the court could have imposed 180 days for what your client did?
If he was going to send him to prison, correct.
Okay, is 180 days in prison or is it in jail?
The caps only control whether he's sent to prison. Community control violations can be punished locally, and that limit is 6 months in jail for a violation.
Okay, that's what I'm talking about.
So he could, so I guess if we have
6 months for each felony conviction that is violated. Or you say 180 days for the sum of the violations.
The statutes do not make clear whether or not I have violation conduct two times or I have two offenses and whether I can stack those impositions, whether for local incarceration, they cannot be stacked by statute. But for sentencing, if we're going to impose sentence by the caps, the statutes do not demonstrate whether or not they can be stacked. Nonetheless, it seems reasonable that they could be in the sense that as long as the consecutive findings could be made. Nonetheless, once that imposition of prison for the violation conduct, and we're applying the caps, so 280 days, and we're going to stack those for about a year, then that is the end of the sentence at that point in time, and the individual would come out on post-release control. All of that said, those marginal components do not change the fact that there are no words in the statute to get to any interpretation other than this binary operation. For this reason, the decision below should be reversed. I'll reserve the remainder of my time. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Napier.
Thank you. May it please this honorable court, Madam Chief Justice O'Connor. My name is Jane Napier. I'm an assistant prosecutor in Champaign County, and I'll be splitting my allotted time with my colleague, Assistant Prosecutor Harold. Appellant has given his positions here today, but appellant's arguments today are not new, they're not novel, and we believe they're clearly contrary to the plain language of the statute. The same proposition raised here has been raised numerous times in the lower appellate courts, asking essentially for a simplistic binary scheme which limits the discretion of the trial court by capping the amount of prison time imposed unless a felony is charged. The appellate courts have consistently disagreed with appellant's arguments and have rejected it. We believe that contrary to the appellant's position, many of the appellate courts, along with the Second District here, have utilized the definition that this court adopted in State v. Taylor and have taken the similar view that the General Assembly did not intend technical violations to bind trial court's discretion to sanction an offender when it tailored substantive rehabilitative requirements to specific conduct. The state believes that this court should not disturb the lower court's rationale, which also addresses necessary rehabilitation of a specific defendant on a case-by-case basis. Contrary to appellant's arguments, there have been many cases which involved non-criminal offenses, and those have been found to be non-technical violations. In State versus Neville in the 8th District, and similarly in State versus Calhoun of the 6th District, the defendants therein basically failed to participate in community control at all, and basically absconding from community control, failing to report to probation at all. Those, based on the severity of that conduct, those cases were found to be non-technical violations.
So, counsel, where do we go to find the definition that we should use that the legislature intended for technical?
I think there's a number of places. I mean, the plain language of technical, I think this court has adopted it in a parole context, very, very close to community control context.
What's your understanding of the plain language of technical?
I think that they're minor technical, de minimis types of violations. You know, if you are, if you fail to meet your probation officer once, we all fail to remember to go to a doctor's appointment from time to time. We can see that allowing that to happen is something de minimis. If basically you don't comply with any term on community control, I think those as an aggregate allow the trial court to have discretion to say that's not a technical violation.
Well, let me ask you the same question I asked your opponent. Isn't de minimis in the eye of the beholder? If I put a condition on a defendant, I don't want you hanging around this particular person because I know that's going to lead to trouble. So, and then probation officer comes in and says, I saw him hanging around with this person. And, you know, one judge might think that's terrible and one might think it's not so bad under the circumstances. And
I think it's the same problem is if we make a bright line. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think
we have to allow the trial court the discretion to look at those things, certainly reviewable as supporting the record under Markham. But I do think that, as you see here, that the appellate courts seem to be getting it right. They seem to be following the same rationale, and they seem to be following the court's examples as set forth in Taylor versus the parole authority.
Creating a bright line, so everybody, so we're clear, does not restrict the judge's ability to send the offender and the violator to prison, right? It just would subject them to caps. And given the fact that this was raised in a budget bill and the legislature is concerned about nonviolent felony fours and fives coming into the prison system where the whole state has to pay for that, I mean, doesn't it make clear that they were trying to say to the courts, hey, stop sending us your technical violations, your violations of the rules. We understand if they commit a new crime, other than a misdemeanor, that's a different story. But violations of the rules, either you do it, deal with it locally, or the caps apply.
But I don't believe that it should be a felony conduct or a technical conduct, that those are the two issues. I think that in looking at some of the cases, for instance, if you unsuccessfully complete a community-based correctional facility program, most of the time it's a drug program, those have been found across the board as specifically tailored to rehabilitate somebody's criminal conduct, and therefore have been found to be non-technical, not a criminal offense. But they basically said that's a significant problem of rehabilitation and a significant problem for a community control supervision. So, and here, I think the Second District follows that same rationale. Here, John Edward Nelson had numerous run-ins with the law. He had five previous prison terms. That he was on post-release control for a felony of violence when he committed the underlying felony offenses in this case. He had some relationship with juveniles that contributed to corrupting others with drugs, and he had numerous contact with his girlfriend that the supervising officer had said, you cannot have contact with this person. It's a directive. She is a trigger for you. He agreed to it, and basically, time after time, the evidence presented is that he got several passes, in essence. He got several warnings, and then finally, he got drunk with his girlfriend, became belligerent with his aunt.
Counselor, is that order to stay away from his girlfriend?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I know, it's hard. stay away from his girlfriend. Is it a difference without a distinction that it was from his probation officer as opposed to the court?
I don't think so. I think that at least the court has indicated that the supervising officer is our representative. He is looking at the case. He sees that what issues are with this defendant. And here, the appellant says, yeah, I got a problem. We end up drama, and we drink, and violence occurs. And basically, this is what resulted from it, exactly the fear that the supervising officer had here. So clearly, the
counsel,
court.
Counsel, I know you're relying on a lot of case law. What wording within the statute supports your position?
I think that when they're talking about technical or misdemeanor, so I think there's a distinction, and I think the Second District in their the underlying case basically had said, yeah, there's a distinction between non-criminal and technical, and that certainly things that are specifically tailored to rehabilitation are might not be a criminal, but are certainly not technical. So So we would ask, based on the facts of this case, that this court affirm the decisions of the Court of Common Pleas of Champaign County and the Second District Court of Appeals, and I will defer to my colleague. Thank you very much.
Mr. Harreld?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Ohio Revised Code Section 2929.15b1c is premised upon the idea that there are two types of community control violations, technical violations and substantive violations. By looking at the case law throughout the state, I think we're up to about 62 cases right now. A technical violation is an isolated infraction of a standard condition of community control that is not overtly germane to either the specific offender or the underlying offense. When we look at the idea of technical, to answer your question of where should we look for the definition of technical, the answer is the dictionary, because it's not defined. This is not an issue of lenity where it can be viewed one way or another.
I did look to the technical definition in the dictionary, and it still didn't help me. How did you? Do you have a dictionary version that you find helpful?
I have five that I find incredibly helpful.
Let's see.
Black's Law Dictionary looks at technical as being immaterial and not substantial. Ballantine's Law Dictionary says it looks at technicality as form over substance. The Oxford English Dictionary looks at it as minor or accidental. Webster's Third International.
So basically de minimis, right?
I think de minimis could be a term that was used for that.
So how do our lower trial courts, if we're trying to give them guidance, distinguish between what they de minimis, minor, and what you said substantive, if there's two different types? Substantive?
Well, and there, I think the dictionary again helps again. Merriam-Webster's looks at substantive as involving matters of major or practical importance to all concerned, the idea of it being important, meaningful, and considerable. The Cambridge Dictionary looks at it as serious and related to real facts. In this case, we have real facts. I think you've got three situations where you're looking at technical and substantive. One is truly technical. Let's look at the concept of the community control condition that says stay away from felons, okay? Mm-hmm. And person works at UPS, the individual is coming in to observe his probationer, and he sees that there's another person who's on probation that works in his same unit. He has technically violated the term of condition that says stay away from other felons. That is a technical violation. In situations like that, absolutely the prison cap should apply. Let's look at another situation where you have somebody who is robbing a house with two other specific individuals, and the court says, stay away from this person, stay away from this person, because when you're together, you do crimes. That is a substantive community control violation. Why? Because it's important.
That's also incurring another felony conviction.
Correct.
Robbing somebody. So that takes you right out of the statute to begin with. When we're talking about interaction, technical violations, you know, for the most part, when people are on community control and they're going to AA meetings or drug, you know, substance abuse meetings or whatever, they're consorting with other felons.
And in standard conditions of community control, like in Wood County, as I know because I've heard them enough times, they specifically say, when you're there for treatment, when you're sitting in the lobby of the probation department, you're going to be there with felons.
Right.
And that's okay.
Okay, they get a pass for that, obviously. Okay, what happens after a treatment meeting, you go out to a movie with one of your fellow felons that is in treatment? Is that a violation?
Is it a violation of community control? The answer is yes. Is it a substantive violation? I think that there's a bit of play in that context. And I think that when you look at the example of, you know, three people commit crimes together, have it be criminal damaging. They key cars, but they're still the same two individuals that you go keying cars with. And even though that's an M2 criminal damaging, if you're specifically telling the individual to stay away from those two other people and they do it, that's a substantive violation. And then the larger grayer area is you have a general condition that says stay away from other bad people. and the person's involved in gang activity. Again, misdemeanor, we'll say misdemeanor gang activity. And then the question is, okay, where does that fall? Is that something where we want the court to be able to say, based on the situation, we've told you to stay away from people that are in your gang, yet you're still doing it? We've tried other methods. And if you look at the vast number of these cases, other methods were employed by the trial court before they said, you know what, if you're not going to listen, we have to send you to prison. This was not Mr. Nelson's first rodeo. I mean, he had been in front of the judge time and time again, said, stay away from this person, stay away from this person. When you meet with her, you're drinking alcohol and you're causing problems. And amazingly enough, what happened? He went out, he drank alcohol, he caused more problems. And quite frankly, had it not been his mother there for the grace of God, he could have been looking at a burglary offense.
And the judge was well within his rights to send him to prison.
Absolutely.
And I agree with you, but why don't the caps apply in this particular case?
Because
what about the nature of the conduct in this particular case took it out of the technical realm and went to substantive?
Because it was narrowly tailored for that offender. Sometimes caps don't work. Sometimes caps aren't a significant enough punishment for the conduct. In State versus Calhoun, you had a trial court that was bending over backwards to allow someone to attend college in West Virginia, begged on the record, please let me go to West Virginia, please let me go to West Virginia. They go, fine, go to West Virginia. The person's there, not going to the probation appointments. West Virginia probation reaches out and says, hey, the person's not there. They send a letter to the defendant, and the Wood County Probation Department says, we'd like you to come and go to probation meetings here in Wood County because you refused to go in West Virginia. His response, come and get me, which the trial court was more than willing to do. That case, that's a substantive violation. When you've got people that understand the terms of probation and consistently violate them, courts across the state have said, this is serious enough where you have to go for an extended term. I look at the drug cases, people that are having dirty screens for fentanyl and heroin and cocaine. It's a life-saving measure. Trial judges understand the defendants that are in front of them. They have the most contact, and they're the ones who should be able to say either a continued term of community control, local jail time. And local jail time, even though it can be longer, if you're still in the community, that doesn't end the accessibility of those defendants to many times the individuals and the things that cause problems.
Counsel, you are rejecting any form of caps here. You're saying that his activity triggered the imposition of a sentence, correct?
In Nelson's case, that's accurate.
Okay. If caps apply, what would your argument be that they should be here? Is it one 180-day, or is it four 180-day?
I would argue that the caps apply to each offense. So if you have someone who's there on four F4s and they violate probation four times, and quite frankly, the courts in Ohio agree to that. I don't have them on the tip of my tongue, but in the amicus brief, there are about four or five cases where courts have allowed for the stacking of technical violations. And again, I would argue that the doctrine of lenity does not apply. This court has recognized that the rule of lenity is not an obstinate rule. The Supreme Court of the United States said it's not an inexorable command. Technical needs to be defined. I agree. Whether that needs to be done by the legislature, or I think this court, in cases like Tracy and the United States Supreme Court in Coverdale, have looked to the dictionary, and I think that the dictionary indicates that technical means small, for lack of a better term. And I think you have to look at it in the context of what's on the other side. The state would argue it's substantive, minor, major.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Counsel.
The word substantive does not appear in the statute. The words of the statute created the bright line. Even if we look to a dictionary definition, say, de minimis is what we're going to use to carry the day, RC 1.42 still requires that to be understood in context. A non-criminal conduct that violates community control juxtaposed against a violent misdemeanor or a sex offense misdemeanor is de minimis. Nonetheless, there's no reason to go to a statute, to a dictionary. And the reason why is because the language in the statute, the words, are clear. Every concept that lower courts or my friends on the other side point to, they're not words from the statute. When my friends from the other side got questions, what words in the statute? They didn't use a simple one or a single one. And the reason why is because they don't exist.
Well, technical is not defined.
This court has defined technical. My friends on the other side say
the statute does not define technical.
Correct.
Okay, so we go to the dictionary.
Incorrect, Your Honor. As this court reiterated in Waite versus DHC LLC, the legislature is presumed to know the decisions from this court. Also, again in RC 1.42, any term that has gained a special meaning by legislative authority or otherwise, a decision from the highest court in the state would qualify as otherwise. And this court has defined technical violations. How? Technical violations are those violations of the terms and conditions of the parole agreement which are not criminal in nature, such as failure to report to the parole officer, association with known criminals, leaving employment, leaving the state, etc. The legislature knew that definition for the reasons that have already been provided, but also they grafted out leaving Ohio. That shows they were using this precise definition. One, we presume they were, and two, they show us they were.
And counsel, do you have any authority? Technical, in my research, is used across the country in statutes like this, and I think there's strong evidence that support that it means in the non-criminal. Do you agree with that?
Yes.
So, again, getting back to my earlier question to you, if we go with de minimis, it's going to continue. It's going to render this statute useless because some people are going to. One judge in one county is going to be applying, seeing something as substantive, and the same action in another county is going to be viewed by another judge as technical, and we're going to have people serving, having the caps applied to different people for the same conduct.
Correct, Justice. Correct,
Counsel,
Justice.
Could there be any difference between wording that applies to parole and wording that applies to probation?
No, Your Honor. Community control and parole are both criminal punishments. There is no difference between the two, but between parole and community control for in function. For all of these reasons, but primarily, there is nothing that the lower courts or my friends from the other side can point to in the statute that allows for this open-ended interpretation, judge by judge, that creates the warren that Justice Donnelly is referring to. What the words create is this binary operation. If that isn't how it should be, the legislature should change it. Please reverse the Second District Court of Appeals.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision.